You like on a clear, dark night to go outside and look up at the stars. I remember as a kid going to my grandmother's house in Porter, Texas, down outside of New Caney, around the Houston and Humble area, and going out and laying down in her yard or maybe on the back of her car or something with a cousin or my brother and just looking up at the stars. If you're real patient, you can see the shooting stars. About every 30 minutes, you can see several shooting stars as they float through the skies, they zoom across. They're still fun to watch, aren't they? You ever go up and just look at all the shooting stars and just see the flame through the sky? Of course, we know they're not even stars. They're just a piece of space debris, a fleck of dust as it goes across the atmosphere, or maybe a pea-sized rock. If you're lucky, you see a large one that might be the size of a golf ball or even an orange, and you see a glow across, and they zoom across very brightly, and then they're burned up and they're gone. I still like to go outside and look at the stars on a clear night. And I go up and see. I always look for the Big Dipper. You ever look for the Big Dipper? It's the, you know, four giant stars make the cup, and then three stars make the handle. And then just kind of mirrored across that would be the Little Dipper. And you see those two constellations, part of Ursa Major and Ursa Minor. Did you know that in the Big Dipper that there are two stars on the end of the drinking cup, that if you draw a line from them, they point to the Little Dipper, specifically to Polaris, the North Star. And that the Underground Railroad has an important part of the Big Dipper and the Polaris. That a slave that was escaping from Mississippi and Alabama, they would learn a song, a coded song called Follow the Dipping Gourd, Follow the Drinking Gourd, another word for the drink, Big Dipper. And you would escape out of those dark nights, and they would find their way north by following Polaris, the North Star. Oh, the shooting stars are fun to watch. They're exciting to see them flame. But it's those pointer stars, the Polaris, that would point to hope and to freedom and a new life. You know, I remember sitting in chapel right up there some 20 years ago. We were having spring or fall revival, I don't remember what it was. It had to be 20 years ago. I remember talking to one of my friends, Chip Alford. He was a writer for the newspaper, and we were talking about the revival services. I remember looking out and seeing this room packed with hundreds of students called by God to go to the ends of the earth, to go to little communities and all around this nation and all around the world take the gospel of Jesus Christ, and was overwhelmed by considering how many pointer stars, how many of you right here will be used by God to change this nation and to change this world? Not because you're a flaming star. Oh, there'll be some of those that you'll see and notice, and they'll be gone before you know it. But you'll shine brightly through the years, and people who are wandering and searching will be able to see you as a pointer star pointing to the North Star, to Polaris, to find hope and life and new life, and that you will be used by God to point to Jesus to encourage others. There's a story in the Bible, Luke chapter 8, verses 41 through 56, we'll look at this morning, about a woman whose life was used to point to the power of Jesus. Luke chapter 8, verse 41 through 56. And my prayer for you is that your life would be a life of influence to point to Jesus. Let me read about this woman. You know, her story is found in all three of the Synoptic Gospels. We don't even know her name. We know a bit about her story, though. It says, "And there came a man named Jairus, and he was an official of the synagogue, and he fell at Jesus' feet and began to implore him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter, about 12 years old, and she was dying. But as he went, the crowds were pressing against him. And a woman who had a hemorrhage for 12 years and could not be healed by anyone came up behind him and touched the fringe of his cloak, and immediately her hemorrhage stopped. And Jesus said, 'Who is the one who touched me?' And while they were all denying it, Peter said, 'Master, the people are crowding around and pressing in on you.'" Everyone's doing this. You can see what it says in Mark. Jesus, everyone is touching you. Jesus said, "Someone did touch me, for I was aware that power had gone out of me." And when the woman saw that she had not escaped notice, she came trembling and fell down and declared in the presence of all the people the reason why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." Here's one woman And she said, I have an illness. I have something wrong. I've been everywhere I could. I've gone to every doctor. It tells us some more. She spent all of her life. She spent all of her money, and nobody could help her. And she came, and here's your word for you. She came with desperation. She came having everything being consumed and out of her life. And if she was going to have life, if she was going to have hope, she was going to have to come in desperation to Jesus, because He and only He was able to meet her needs. Just think about her life. She was religiously unclean for 12 years. Issue of blood, not allowed to enter the temple to worship. She spent all of her money. Everything was gone. She was financially spent. Social outcast, emotionally uncertain. She was too embarrassed even to come before Jesus and ask for healing. She thought she would sneak up behind Him. And He was the only hope that she had. And to touch the fringe of His garment, the tassel hanging down of the rabbi, and perhaps Jesus would heal me. Desperation. I got to tell you, we have far too many people who want to preach from strength and power and might. You don't find that in the Gospels. You don't find that in the Scriptures. What you find is people with desperate lives being broken and poured out for Him, saying, God, here is my life. I lay it before You. Moses said, God, if You do not lead us, we will not move from this place. A desperate God, You are the one that I lean on and must have. Say, God, I want my life to be used by You. What did we read this morning in Luke? That they were arguing about greatness, and Jesus, oh no. You don't argue about greatness. You learn to be a servant. You learn to be the least. You learn to preach and proclaim and teach and to minister from brokenness and need and desperation. You talk to somebody in your church who's lost their job, who has a sick kid and can't afford to go to the doctor. Their house, not sure about making the payments. And they had saved, and all of their life savings is gone. And they understand desperation. And you want to come in strength and power and might? No, you come saying, here is what my life has been, with desperation and brokenness and need. And be broken before them. Say, here is what my life has been. You might see me all cleaned up on a Sunday morning, but you need to see my life in desperation, leaning on Jesus. Would you be free from the power of sin? There's power, but it's not in me. It's in the blood. You've got to look to Jesus. You've got to be broken before Him with desperation to lay your life. Say, Jesus, I cannot preach in strength. Jesus said, it is not the sick that need the doctor. Matthew chapter 9, verse 12. It is not those who are healthy who need a physician, but those who are sick. To come with desperation, the Pharisees wanting to dance around and say, oh, why are you eating with sinners? Because it is those people who are desperate that need me, that I will minister to, that I will heal them. In desperation, we lay our lives before Jesus. Paul understood what it was, the thorn in the flesh, the brokenness that he experienced. He had prayed, oh, take it from me, I don't want this, Jesus. You remember what Jesus said, 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9 and 10. My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness. And Paul says, most gladly, therefore, I would rather boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. That we come, as this woman did, with desperation before Jesus. Say, God, here is my life, and as I minister in Your name, it is not as strength and power, but with brokenness of life, that my life might be laid before You. That we find that His grace is sufficient in the midst of our need and brokenness. Would you boast in your weakness before Christ, that He might do in your life, to use your life as He wants to, in the midst of brokenness? This woman thought she could slip in and slip out. She tried to come, and thinking that nobody would notice, that nobody would see. And Jesus said, who is the one who touched me? Who grabbed my garment? I felt power going out. Who was this? Jesus, by the way, He already knew. Jesus was aware. It wasn't an accident to Him. The disciples thought it was a nuisance. Jesus, everybody has touched you. Now come on. I mean, really, what are you talking about? Somebody touched you. Everybody's touching you. Jesus needed this woman's declaration of what He had done in her life. That's why He says, verse 47, "Woman saw she had not escaped. Notice she fell down, trembling before Him, declared in the presence of the people." That's what has to. It is not enough for our lives to experience the brokenness and healing of Jesus Christ. We must be able to be willing to declare what Christ has done in our lives. There is no such thing as a silent Christian, a lifestyle witness that is not matched with a verbal witness and declaring, "Here is who Jesus is. This is what Jesus has done in my life, that in the midst of my desperation, I declare that I met Jesus, and here's what He has done in me and through me, that His name might be glorified." I tell you, we understand as a society about declaration, about testimony. The first quarter of 2008, the top 10 advertisers in the U.S. spent $4.4 billion declaring. Super Bowls, all the ads that they could do, and just the top 10. Not the top, but in the top 10, $4.4 billion declaring. And you know what? You know about a personal testimony too. You ever watch TV when they have these weight loss commercials on? You know, here's what it is. I was overweight and I had tried everything. I was desperate. And here's what worked in my life. I use the ab crunchers every day, only 30 minutes. You can do it too. Isn't that what they say? I've lost 552 pounds in 30 days. Isn't that about right? And you think, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. If you're desperate, you begin to believe it. Well, I need that too. I'm going to try because it's going to work. It worked for them. It'll work for me. Here's this woman thought she could sneak away. She thought she could slip out. Jesus said, "Listen, if I've changed your life, woman, you tell what I've done. If I've changed your life from desperation, you proclaim in your weakness and brokenness, I've worked in your life and changed your life, that you must declare your message to the ends of the earth." If Jesus has changed your life, tell somebody about it. They are longing, waiting for you to tell about what Jesus has done. What's Tom Rainer's book, 2001, he put out, Surprising Things to Learn. That 8 out of 10 people will come to church if somebody invites them. 8 out of 10 people will listen if you will tell them. 80% of our nation would be reached if the people of God will go out and tell somebody about Jesus Christ. Would you say, "God has changed me. I thought I could slip away and nobody would know, but Jesus has called me in fear and trembling, perhaps, but to speak clearly, to declare the glory of what He has done in my life, because it is in my weakness that He is able to be made strong, to declare, here is the greatness of God, powerfully proclaimed." Matthew chapter 5, verse 14 and 15. "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men." See, we understand declaration. By the way, isn't that how you choose your professors? Somebody says, you need to be sure and take this professor. I know they said they're hard, but you would not believe what I've learned from them. You need to be sure and take Calvin Pearson, because he's a gracious and forgiving man who loves the Lord and proclaim, help you as you grow in Christ. You need to take a Jack McGorman. He'll tell you that his name is Cactus Jack, but his life has been transformed. And when you study from him, you will see what Christ has done in his life. You need to take this man. You need to take this professor. You need to learn from him. This is a declaration of what you've experienced in order that someone else might be a part of it. See, we know personally about declaration. We need to practice the declaration. Say, "Christ, here's how my life has been changed. This is what you have done in me. And so I lay it before you, not in the closet, not in secret, but as a city set on a hill, as a light that is lighting up the entire room. God, use my life to declare the glory of Jesus Christ to all the nations." It's not just out there. It is right here with the person that's before you, that you might declare to them what Jesus has done in your life. Declaration. why did all of this happen? What was the point of this woman having to declare? They didn't even tell us her name. All we know is that for 12 years, an issue of blood, and Jesus healed her. But it's the first part of that story. That there's a man named Jairus, who, by the way, was a religious leader, a synagogue leader. He was not embarrassed to come before Jesus. He was a righteous man in many respects. But he was also desperate because in his upstanding prosperity of life, he had to come before Jesus saying, "My daughter is sick and she is 12 years old. Jesus, is there anything that you can do for my daughter? Is there anything that you can, would you come? You can heal her. Jesus, would you come and heal her?" And Jesus was making way. By the way, I find it interesting that this daughter who was 12 years old and ill, that her story is paralleled by a woman who had an issue of blood for 12 years. Scripture doesn't explain why, but I'm telling you. Here's this woman with an issue of blood who was desperate for 12 years the entire time this little girl was living. And here this father comes forward. "I am desperate. Jesus, what will you do in my daughter's life?" And while they were walking, this interruption came of this woman. Do you know what this father was thinking? It doesn't tell us. Have you ever been with a sick child sitting in an emergency room and seeing other people going in? And so what is it? "My child is sick. Would you take care of my daughter? Don't tell me about these others that are going. This is my child. Something is terribly wrong. Do something for my child." And here's this woman in the crowds. And Jesus stopping everyone, headed to the daughter who is dying and saying, "Somebody touched me." "What do you mean somebody touched you? My daughter is dying. Come with me." And Jesus makes this woman declare what he had done in her life, so that her life could be a demonstration of who Jesus is. Look at these words. What did Jesus tell her? "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." "Jairus, your daughter has died. Don't bother the master anymore." What did Jesus tell this man? He almost word for word what he just told this woman. "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Do not be afraid. Your faith will heal your daughter." That's what he says. It's the same words. Your faith, your belief, your trust will save you. Here is this woman who is nameless and faceless to us. And then Jesus pulls out her declaration. "Your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Do not be afraid any longer. Only believe and she will be well." Because it was her testimony that was going to strengthen his faith. This man and this woman, as far as we knew, they never spoke a word to each other. She's just a nameless, faceless person in the crowd, embarrassed to even have her face shown. And here's Jairus. Here's the testimony of this woman. And Jesus says, "Your faith has saved you." And this father in brokenness hears the word of his daughter. And Jesus says, "No fear. You just saw, you just heard what I did in the life of this woman. And it was her faith that brought healing, salvation to her. And I'm going to walk with you to your house. You have faith. Only believe. And the healing, just like you saw in this woman, the salvation that came to this woman's house, will come to your house as well." And the people that heard it, and they laughed. Don't bother him. She's dead. There's not anything you can do. But Jesus, the power of Christ, worked in this daughter's life and the healing that came. While he was still speaking, someone came from the house of the synagogue official saying, "Your daughter has died. Do not trouble the teacher anymore." Jesus heard this. He answered him, "Do not be afraid any longer. Only believe. She will be made well." When he came to the house, he didn't allow anyone to enter with him except Peter and John and James and the girl's father and mother. Now when they were all weeping and lamenting for her, but he says, "Stop weeping, for she has not died but is asleep." And they began laughing at him, knowing that she had died. Knowing. And he, however, took her by the hand and said, "Child, arise." And her spirit returned, and she got up immediately, and he gave orders for something to be given to her to eat. And her parents We're amazed. Here Christ has impacted a woman's life in desperation so that the declaration could be made, so that her life could be a demonstration, not of her greatness, but that she could be a pointer to Jesus. Who are your role models? You are probably not here by accident. There was probably someone in your life that influenced you, that pointed you to Jesus, pointed you as a minister. Probably when you preach, you've modeled that preacher that you've heard all these years. You've got the role models that you use in life. Say, here's one that I'm able to imitate in life. Here's one that I've seen how they have lived. It's a parent or a Sunday school teacher or RA, GA leader, and your life has been influenced by them. They've been a demonstration of the power of Christ. And because of that, He has worked in your life. They were the pointers. Who will you be the pointers for? Who is it that you will be used by Jesus to point them to Him, that they would see your life? And you'll be the one that's visible, shining for Him. And they'll follow that pointers to see Jesus. And they'll see in your desperation how Christ changed your life. And that you will declare the greatness of God in your life. Will be used to show others who He is. Listen, your life's experiences are not accidental and they are not wasted. Even if they were in opportunities, times in life when you strayed and went way away from God, and you thought, it was a wasted years of my life, God will use every moment of your life to point to Jesus in the midst of our brokenness and weaknesses and failures, show the redemptive power of Jesus Christ. There is nothing wasted in your life. This woman, for 12 years, an issue of blood, it's a wasted point of her life, unclean, financially spent. Everything was gone. Oh no, it was used that her life might be brought to a point of desperation, that she might declare the greatness of God, to be a demonstration, to point to Jesus. Here's what Jesus has done in me. Here's what Jesus will do in your life as well. Jesus will use you to point to Himself. You're going to look out, and you're going to see the other students called by God and used by God. And my prayer is that you would take your place among the countless other shining stars of God, and that He would use your life to point to Jesus, and that you would be desperate before Him. I'm desperate for you. You're the air I breathe. As the deer pants for the streams of water, so my soul longs for you, O God. If you do not lead us, we will not go. My life is broken. I would rather boast about my weaknesses. I am desperate for you. God, here's my life. Change me that I can proclaim the power of Jesus of what you have done in my life. And God, use me to point others to Jesus. God bless you.